Parshas Vayakel, right at the outset, tells us a very well-known pasuk, one we're all familiar with. Sheshes yamim tasem malacha b'yom hashvi. Yelchem Shabbos kodesh Shabbos Shabboson laHashem kol kol osabam malacha yumas. Very well-known concept. Other pesukim similar about how 6 days you do the work, and of course on the seventh day of Shabbos Kodesh, with significant penalties for those who do not keep the halachot. Of course, the overall theme, the dominant theme of Parshas Vayakel is not Shabbos, but what? Melechas HaMishkan, exactly, companion to Parshas Truma, and it's actually that basis, the conjunction between Mishkan and Shabbos, which seems to be somewhat surprising, that leads Rashi to quote from Chazal, a very famous pasuk, idea, what's the association, the juxtaposition of Shabbos and Mishkan, and in fact, not only the juxtaposition, but as Rashi says, hikdim lahem ashara Shabbos letzivim lechza Mishkan, not just a juxtaposition, but Shabbos precedes the command that Moshe is now going to give the Jewish people about the Mishkan. What is the purpose of that? Lomar, to teach, the Jew will teach us, she'eno doches ha-Shabbos, that the Mishkan, as important as it is, cannot be performed on Shabbos, the building of the Mishkan, when it involves prohibited malacha. So in terms of a pshat and a halachic drush of the psukim, we have this well-known drusha that Rashi quotes. However, I thought that there's a larger truth that is being intention that is being expressed by Chazal and by Rashi here. And that is the temptation that we all have, and I think it often comes from a good yet mistaken place, of the ends justifying the means. And especially when the ends are themselves some perceived higher spiritual goal. So we often think that that should justify all sorts of shortcuts and all sorts of technical halachos and details because we want to serve that higher purpose. And one could easily have imagined that the idea of building a Mishkan and a house for Hashem and to bring down the Shekhinah and a rendezvous with the divine, you know, what's a few, you know, writing a few letters on some boards or pulling some weeds out of the, you know, or something out of the, you know, out of the ground? You know, how is that going to get in the way of such sublime spirituality? And yet, in fact, the Torah says, the halacha rules, that in fact, the ends do not justify the means, and you cannot be Machal Shabbos in order to build the Mishkan, as noble and as wonderful as the impulse might be. So, broadly speaking, I think we all, sometimes to one degree or another, suffer from that mistaken thinking. And specifically when it comes to Shabbos, there often is a tension. And what I'm alluding to, which is what I would like to discuss today, is the fact that, as many of us know, whether you were ever involved in America, let's say an NCSY, or whatever some of the equivalent youth groups or adult outreach programs are, in South Africa, Australia, and Britain, etc., and that is that the experience of Shabbos can play an outsized role in, if it's a beautiful Shabbos, in showing people the beauty of Yiddishkeit, the beauty of Torah and mitzvos. And very often, you know, if we would limit our outreach and educational activities to 6 days a week, we feel probably correctly that we'd have a lot less success than if we could invite people to experience a Shabbos with us, you know, again, to borrow a classic American NCSY example, to have a great, you know, Friday night, or those Havdalah ceremonies, or the Chagigas, and the singing and the dancing, or even just a Shabbos meal around the table with an observant family. I think sometimes those of us who are FFBs, who've grown up with this, we don't always appreciate just how rare and actually how beautiful a Shabbos meal you know, really is for families that don't have that. So very, very powerful. And obviously, just in recent years, the Shabbos Project, which started in South Africa, but Baruch Hashem, the Jewish community there and its chief rabbi have been nice enough to share that idea with the rest of the world. So we know how powerful and how potent Shabbos can be. The question is that in most cases, we have a tension that is very parallel to the Rashi we started with, which is that, you know, in some cases we could have a Shabbaton and everyone could be in a hotel or everyone could be sleeping over at various people's houses and kind of have people for 25 hours. But in many, many cases, that's not going to be applicable. And we may have a relative or a coworker or a friend that we want to invite over, either for the explicit purpose to share the beauty of Shabbos or just because they're our relative. and we want to be able to have Friday night dinner with them, or we want to have Seder with them, or a Yontif meal, etc. So if families, you know, maybe not every family member is equally observant in a strict sense, but they may be traditional and they may want to gather together around a Yontif or a Shabbos meal, right? There's certainly a lot of upside from the family and the religious perspective. And the question is, you know, how is that allowed? Again, we won't be limiting ourselves just to this Rashi, but it's a good springboard. There's a certain obvious tension. And basically, the question I think we have to analyze on a number of different levels is, if we want to be able to be makel, if in some or all circumstances we want to enable and permit such invitations, so we have to figure out what are the equivalents to Melechas HaMishkan. What are the things which might be prohibited? And then the question is it really the case, or are there scenarios in which we can find leniencies? Because if we remain with prohibitions, then the question is, how can we overlook them? Wouldn't that really be violating both the letter, and if not the letter, then the spirit of this idea that Rashi quotes? So that's our agenda for today. There's a lot of good reasons on a family or communal level to want to permit such invitations. The question is it really allowed, or does it violate halacha? So the first issue that is discussed, and this is, as you will see, discussed by many, I don't want to say all, but many of the heavy hitter, big time, late 20th, early 21st century poskim, the first issue which is discussed is the question of lifnei iver, right? Without getting into a whole shiur on lifnei iver, but a basic review, even though you're probably mostly familiar with the idea, but basic review, based on a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, the Gemara tells us, in Avodah Zarah, places, that you cannot be responsible for enabling another person to sin. Now, how do you define enabling? So that we'll have to get to in more nuance. But simply speaking, to take an example that's the classic one in the Gemara, if you are on one side of the river and you have some wine, and across the other side of the river is a Nazir, and he's desperate for the wine, asks you to get in your rowboat and row across the river and give him the wine, and you do so, so he has violated the prohibition of Nazir, if he drinks the wine, but you have been in violation of an Isur de Oraisa, a prohibition called Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol, because if it wouldn't have been for your action, he would not have been able to sin. Your action enabled his sin. Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. And a number of poskim, no less than Rav Moshe Feinstein and others, maintain that Shabbos in the people who you know are going to drive should be Usur Mida Oraisa because of Lifnei Iver. When you invite them, they're getting in their car to drive from their house to your house. It's equivalent to any classic example of Lifnei Iver. They're doing it, they're driving because of you, it's your invitation, and therefore that should be considered a violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. Now, L'cha'ora, one could quibble with this determination. Because as I reviewed the Gemara and I sketched the scenario as Rav Moshe describes it, the invitation that you or I are giving to this friend, relative, associate who's not yet observant, that is the cause of their Chil Shabbos. Your invitation is enabling or causing their Chil Shabbos. However, L'cha'ora, one could very seriously question that assumption. And among others, Rav Asher Weiss, Shalita, in a published tshuva in his tshuva sefer, Minchas Asher, Chelek Beis, he in fact does issue with that assumption. After all, he says, who are we talking about? Presumably we're talking about someone who drives anyway. Are you really telling me that this person was going to spend the whole Shabbos at home? You know, maybe just, you know, maybe not davening learning Mishnayos all day, but, you know, looking at his stamp collection or something like that, and it's only because of your invitation, that's why he's driving. You've caused him. If it wouldn't have been for you, he wouldn't have driven. Not likely. Rather, he has a car, he has keys. If he doesn't go to you, maybe he'll go shopping, maybe he'll go play golf, maybe he'll just go out to dinner at a restaurant with his spouse or something. But the idea that he's not going to drive if it wouldn't have been for you, which is the criteria to violate Lifnei Iver, that they couldn't or wouldn't have sinned without your help, that a number of posts can point out probably is a little bit of a stretch. And Rav Rav Asher Weiss really feels that the idea of Lifnei Iver really is not applicable here. Again, at first blush, it seems to be like an obvious issue, but it says if you dig down a little deeper, if you peel it back, he thinks it really does not reach the criteria. It's interesting, one of the great contemporary Israeli poskim, someone who has, actually Rav Asher Weiss has also visited this yeshiva, but someone who's visited this yeshiva many times, is the current Rav Rashi of Ramat Gan, Rav Yaakov Ariel Shlita. He had a very close relationship with Rav Lichtenstein and was here more than I know. He has a multi-volume set of Tshuva Svarim called Ba'ohala Shel Torah, and there he is kind of somewhere in the middle. He's not completely convinced that Rav Moshe is right to go so far as to say it's an Isser Daraisa Lifnei Iver. On the other hand, he's not so convinced that, well, just because the person is not generally a Shomer Shabbos, you can for sure assume that they were going to drive anyway. He thinks, you never know, you know, a person might have just wanted to take a day off, they wanted to be restful. It's not, a guarantee. So he kind of quibbles a little bit. He says, at best, maybe it's a suffix. But a suffix, he, in the end, does not think in and of itself would be sufficient to be lenient. If we can, as we're going to get to, if we can kind of find other reasons to be lenient, so if Ariel thinks that maybe this point that he's going to drive anyway, maybe is could be added to, as what we call a sniff. An additional point, as I'm sure you have seen, and certainly you will continue to see the more and more you study halacha, sometimes we can, you know, have a easy, straightforward answer, yes or no, but sometimes, especially when a posek is looking to matir, to permit something which is not so obvious, so they will, you know, string together a number of possible arguments. Any one of them may be not strong enough on their own, but can accumulate to sufficient for a heter. So Rav Yaakov Ariel basically takes that middle position. He's not just, again, it's common sense, you would think, right? Is the person going to drive, presumably? They're not only driving because of me. Nevertheless, he thinks that's maybe a sniff lahakel. But he says, since you can't know for sure, it's possible. Not everyone drives every single day, do they? I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's even a sociological thing. Maybe people in certain countries drive more than they drive in Israel. I'm not sure. And that's his position. But I personally, for whatever it's worth, I think Rav Asher Weiss's point is very persuasive. I find Rav Moshe's assumption to be difficult, but Rav Moshe did paskin that it would be a lifnei iver daraisa. Rav Asher Weiss does not think it's relevant, and Rav Yaakov Ariel is kind of misupak. Yes, Mordechai.
Me and the person would try that. Nobody accidentally decides to keep Shabbos. I mean, you have to very actively decide to not do any of the halachos, end up not doing them. So nobody would ever keep Shabbos if they're not.
I think that's probably true, but that's the role that you. Right. I think you're probably right, unless they're in like some spa where they're pampered and everything is done for them. But then they have to have like cucumbers on their eyes or something. I don't know. You don't want to do that anyway. So, or maybe you do. Anyway, so. I don't know, though. It's a good point, though. I think you're probably right, Mordechai, but I'm not sure that it matters. Meaning, the question is not whether they're going to be a Shomer Shabbos. Like you said, the likelihood of that is incredibly minimal. The question is, not just something like that, are they going to do this malacha because of you, or might they do this otherwise? So, to say that they're only going to do this malacha because of me, that Rav Asher Weiss points out. But again, the larger, your argument can be used in both directions. It could be used, I don't know if you meant it to be lenient or to be machmir.
So I meant it to be lenient, but I could have the machmir.
Right, so I said, you could really...
He's going to do it. The fact that he drove from his house to your house would not have happened had you not told him.
That's for sure true. That's Rav Moshe's basically, right. Rav Moshe certainly could argue that. And Rav Asher Weiss looks at it more broadly. He's not going to be
so
a...
I guess the question is whether Rav Asher isn't specific.
One right, so Rav Asher Weiss looks at this, more broadly that he's a Mechal Shabbos, and even more specifically, he's probably going to drive anyway. Anyway, yes, please.
Does it matter at all that he probably won't break Shabbos when he's at your house? In some ways, it's like...
It might. Well, we're going to get to that. We're just starting. Oh. But for the purpose of Lifnei Iver, at least for now, let's assume that it's not. Yes?
So, Rosh Hashanah, he says it's Mutar, or you said...
Who?
Rosh Hashanah.
I think so. But again, we didn't end this year yet. We're on this point. On this point. I didn't give you any final psalm yet. Okay. So... yes, please.
We often say that, for example, with young children, that it's okay for them to, for example, say Hashem's name if we're doing it for chinuch purposes.
Chinuch, right.
So now, can we not say that this guy could break Shabbos anyway. We don't know exactly whether he's going to drive anyway, whether he might go home anyway and switch on the lights. But for kind of purposes, that it shouldn't be that much of an issue because he's going to be mechallel Shabbos. And then maybe if he's going to mechallel Shabbos and come to for Friday night supper.
So I'm not sure I would use the chinuch analogy, but could there be an argument why we should nevertheless be mekil? The answer is yes. We're just getting started. The answer is yes. But I'm not sure that's analogous. Again, it would be as if, and again, I don't think we do this. I mean, do you have kids yet? I'm just kidding. But when you do, I don't think you will go to your child, you know, whatever, you know, Hashem's name, you know, as a way of practicing. We don't do that. We give them the little apple, we give them the candy, we say, Baruch, Atah. But I don't think it's exactly the same thing. But you're pointing out that, and I think it was similar to what was said before, maybe this Daniel also was alluding to, that there could be larger spiritual calculus that could be taking place, right? Fair enough. Again, you have to, let's let the sugya breathe a little bit. Let's go step by step. I'll get to you in a little bit, okay? Let's see step two. So step two is the fact that, okay, let's grant that we're going to say that Rav Moshe overreached maybe a bit. It's hard to argue that it's really lifnei iver. I mean, if it would be, that's a nisr daraisa, that's pretty serious. But the post can point out that it's not all or nothing. There is something which is a lower level, but still prohibited, called Sayeya Ovrei Avera. Sayeya means that even though I'm not enabling the prohibition, like Lifnei Iver demands, the guy couldn't get the wine if I didn't row across the river. Misayeya means even if we're both on the same side of the river, and he could get the wine on his own, but he's lazy. Or perhaps tired because he's already had a little wine. Nevertheless, he says to me, please can you give me some wine? So that's not Lifnei Iver. That's clear in the Gemara because he could have gotten it on his own. But there are some Rishonim, notably the Rush and Tosvos in Masech the Shabbos, who both paskin that even when you're on, quote, one side of the river, Chad Avra Dinara, to use the Gemara's term, where the Nazir and the wine are easily obtainable for one another. Just that you're helping. That's not enabling. That's not Lifnei Iver D'Oraisa. Nevertheless, they say that's still prohibited midrabanan. The Isur is called Misayeya L'Ov Devera. We're helping. I'm not enabling, but I'm assisting. A Jew is not allowed to be involved, period. Kihuzeh, Nikuda. We can't be involved. It doesn't matter that I'm not enabling. It doesn't matter that he could have done it on his own. We cannot enable. We cannot participate one way or another. That's something called misayeya. Now, the question is, when does misayeya apply? This is not so simple. If we were to just take it as a blanket prohibition, so then lichaora, we could say that these Shabbos invitations should be usur at least midrabanan. Maybe the person's driving anyway, but according to this, you know, relevant to kind of what Mordechai was saying before, but it becomes moot. It doesn't matter whether he was going to drive anyway. None of it matters. The bottom line is, he is going to drive to your house. That is prohibited. And you had some participation in that. You can't. There's only so much we can downgrade your role. Maybe you're not enabling their Chilul Shabbos. You're not guaranteeing or forcing their Chilul Shabbos. But you do play a role. Maybe that should be prohibited, and we should be done with the whole invitation topic based on Nisayeya. So how do we, and in fact, some poskim make that argument. So how do poskim, or if one wanted to be lenient, how might one neutralize this argument? Let me go through a few of these and then I'll take the questions. Okay, but let's do this particular subtopic here. So there's at least three different arguments that one could make based on discussions found in poskim and Shulchan Aruch and the Tshuva literature, which might neutralize this potential problem. Number one, the first, which is politically incorrect, but sometimes politically incorrect helps you in this regard. And that is, perhaps this prohibition of Misayeya does not apply to non-observant Jews. What do I mean? There's a shach, the shach in Yoredeus and Kuf Nun Aleph, who has the following chiddush. Where he gets it from and what's his proofs, we don't have time for at the moment. But the shach there in Yoredeus has the following chiddush. He says the idea of Misayeya, the idea that I can't even help a little bit, that only applies to people who are basically generally on the mitzvah observant team. people who generally try to do the good thing, the right thing, this is, no one's perfect, we all sin at some point, but people who are generally Israelim Ksherim, so if it turns out that they're sinning, you can't help them even a little bit, that's Isser Darabal Mesayaya. But, says the Shach, if you have a non-Jew who is sinning against one of their own precepts, like Aver Menachai for a non-Jew, or murder, or some other of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, the Noachide laws, even though Lifnei Iver applies to a non-Jew. The two classic cases in the Gemara. One is you can't give wine to a Nazir, and the other is you can't give Aver Menachai, a limb torn from a living animal, you can't give that to a non-Jew. Yes, just pause for a moment to think about the fact that that apparently was once upon a time in human history enough of a desirous food that it actually had to be prohibited. That blows my mind, right? You don't need to give me a mitzvah not to eat from a limb torn from a living animal. I don't know anybody who you do need to give such a prohibition to, but apparently there was a time in history where that was a real issue, and Jews and non-Jews needed to be prohibited from that. But we were returning to our regular scheduled program. So we know that Lifnei Iver does apply to a non-Jew, which is itself an interesting halacha, but that's in the Gemara. So if the Aver Menachai was on one side of the river and the non-Jew was on the other side, you could not get in that rowboat and bring the Aver Menachai. That's true. But says the Shach, that's only when it's two sides of the river. That's Lifnei Iver Daraisa. But if we're talking about this Durabonon of Misayeya, so there he says it only applies to a Yisrael who is otherwise observant. But to a non-Jew, it doesn't apply. Or to a Yisrael Mumar, a Jew who is otherwise generally not mitzvah observant. Not just a person who happens to be sinning now, but someone who really is generally just not observant. That's the opinion of the Shach. And even in his own day, and on the page of Shulchan Aruch, for nothing to do with being diplomatic or nice or achdus or anything like that, there's what to quibble about his chiddush on its own merits. But be that as it may, even though, again, as I said, I don't think it would be the most popular thing to say in a vacuum, but Rav Asher Weiss, in the same tshuva, he says, well, this is another reason to be mekil. Because presumably the person that you're inviting over, the whole reason we're talking about is someone who regularly is Mechal Shabbos. So, not that that's a good thing, but it helps, so to speak, in this case. It's not Lifnei Iver, we could argue, because the guy's going to drive anyway. Ah, what about Messiah? Messiah doesn't apply to a person who would drive on Shabbos. The very fact that the person drives on Shabbos is a Mechal Shabbos, as sad as that is, but it actually, in a backdoor way, helps us in this case. That's sort of Usher Weiss's argument. That's the first argument you could make to neutralize the possible prohibition and problem of Messiah. A second argument you can make to neutralize it, and that is a suggestion made in the name, based on a comment of the Dogam. Dogam Ravava was written by Rabbi Chesda Landau, more well known for his Tshuva Svarim called the Noda B'Yehuda. The Noda B'Yehuda. So he also has a commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch called the Dogal Mirvava. So the Dogal Mirvava there, commenting on this same siman in Shulchan Aruch, he says that Misayeh doesn't always apply. What's his distinction? He doesn't distinguish between Jew and non-Jew, or observant and non-observant. He distinguishes between incidental or accidental sin versus an intentional, a mazid versus a shogeg, so to speak. If a person is more accidentally sinning, and you help him in any way, you are Messiah. That's a prohibition. But if this person knows very well what they're doing and is sinning with kavana, right? They go to the mikvah and hinani muchan mezumen to be over this aveira with great malice aforethought. They are very deliberate in their transgression. So then you still can't do lifnei iver. If it's two sides of the river, you still can get in your rowboat and bring them his wine. But if on one side of the river, everyone's all having a party on the same side of the beach, and he just says, hey, buddy, pass the wine, says the Dogal Marvava, and a Chanami. Messiah does not apply. Messiah just meant that if a person who's accidentally sinning, that person you can't help in any way. But a person who's intentionally sinning, they know that you can't. So here also, Poskim suggested, this is also perhaps another argument to be lenient. Again, unless you could find the Jew who doesn't know that you, the Orthodox Jew, thinks he's not allowed to drive, but again, in the scenario we're describing, more typically, they know, at the very least, they know that Orthodox Jews don't drive. Right? Now, they may believe that they're allowed to drive. That's the whole point. They don't believe in Torah or Shulchan Aruch or whatever. That's the whole purpose of this kirev exercise to begin with. But nevertheless, one could argue, again, maybe you could quibble with it, but some could say that perhaps if a person who regularly drives on Shabbos, they know it's, you know, they know that, at least from the Orthodox perspective, it's not allowed. So maybe that would be another carve-out why Misayah would not apply. A third argument, and I'll take the questions in a minute, this is also very important. There are a number of tshuva svarim, a number of poskim, very, very prominent ones. The Netziv of Volozhin and his Sefer, the Meshiv Davar, or the Binyan Sion of Yaakov Ettlinger, the great Gadol from Germany, the Maharsham of Brezhin, the great Galatzianer Gadol, great, great Gadolim from 100 plus, 200 years ago, great, great Gadolim, all three more or less said the same thing. And that is that maybe this idea of misayeya, the idea that you can't help a person, even though you're hanging out on the same side of the river, you can't help them get their wine, you can't be involved any way, shape, or form with a person's avera, they both suggest, when is misayeya a problem? Only if it's at the time that the person is sinning, you're helping, you're doing some assistance at the time that he's sinning, or with the object with which he is sinning, with the guf ha'isr, or b'sha'as ha'isr, at the time, or with the object itself. But if you did something in some anticipatory pre-stage, which helped, not enabled, but helped the person sin, that would not be, they argue, a violation of misayeya. Now, if that's true, that is an obvious, beautiful, unimpeachable, I would say, heter here. Because what's the thing that you did which is in any way somehow helping, enabling, assisting, being a part of this guy's Chil Shabbos, whether it's your cousin, your coworker, or whoever the Kirov organization set you up with? What's the thing that you are doing that's helping, enabling them to sin? What's the thing? An invitation. And when does that invitation happen? Presumably not on Shabbos. So your role, quote unquote, is happening before the sin. You call them a week in advance, you call them a day in advance, 3 days in advance, when it was. So according to these poskim, misayeya can't apply here either, because it was happening before the sin. Misayeya is only when the person's sinning, he has the wine anyway, he says, pass me a cup or something like that. So there, it's b'shas the avera. So that's a sin. Or he asks you, pass the wine. That's begufo shel avera, shel isur. But here, the invitation is not the thing, and it's certainly not at the time of the sin. So just, again, to review, we'll take a few questions, but just so we haven't lost sight of the big picture, let's zoom out for a second. Where are we? We asked, what issues come up on this halachic question of inviting non-religious friends or relatives or coworkers and the like for Shabbos? So the first question we said is, maybe it's lifnei iver daraisa. You can't do something that enables a sin. So we said that that's debatable because the person's probably going to be driving anyway. Then we said, but isn't there a derabanan prohibition called misayeya, which is that even if you're not enabling, but you can't in any way participate whatsoever in the person's sin. And here you are inviting them over. Isn't that some level of participation? We said, yes, maybe. But you could argue, if you wanted to be lenient, you could make any one of three arguments. Number one is, if this person is unobservant, maybe the prohibition of misayeya doesn't apply to people who regularly sin. Number one. Number two, we suggested, perhaps it doesn't apply to a person who's sinning deliberately. Maybe it's only when a person's accidentally sinning. Number three, we said, you were helping at the time of the sin. But here, the only role I'm playing that could be prohibited, what are we talking about? It's the invitation. Well, that clearly happened before Shabbos, not at the time of the sin. So if you accept, you don't have to, just for the record, you don't have to buy all three of those. You just have to buy one of them. If you buy any one of those arguments, then you could be lenient and get past the second issue. Yes, Zach.
two questions.
You only get one. Pick your best. Give me your best shot.
The post game that say that it ends the issue with Usher.
On the Misayeh argument.
Yeah.
Ramosha, and we'll see others. I think we'll see others. But at the end of the shiur, I'll give you the wrap up of the who's who.
And also, in terms of the third option, let's say you have to bump to the guy on the previous Shabbos, and you're running him for the next shot.
Interesting. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it, that would still be okay, according to that option. I think it would still be okay. Yes, please.
Isn't the case of the Gemara intentional when he asked for the...
No, you don't, there's no way to know that because we don't know from the Gemara, or it's not limited in the Gemara that he knows that the yayin is usur, or as far as I can recall, I don't think so. He's not accidentally drinking wine thinking it's Coke, you know, Coca-Cola. You can double check the Gemara. I don't think it's mukhrach in the Gemara one way or the other. Yes.
According to Shah, what would you do? Where would the first thing you'd like find out?
I don't know. It's a discussion. It's always more complicated. The question, I'll translate it into more diplomatic terms and less yeshivish terms. It's okay. The question is, it's always more complicated to deal with people who grew up knowing better and chose to throw off the yoke of mitzvot than people who never knew. Right? That in many areas of halacha, it becomes more complicated. But I would think that, in all honesty, that it wouldn't matter for the Shach. Yeah, I think that he's a Yisrael Mumer is Yisrael Mumer. If anything, I mean, let me put it this way. Again, what I said about politically correct, in all seriousness, what I meant was as follows. And again, I don't want to like veer into like VOD or like, you know, press conference territory. We're speaking strictly halachically now, but obviously we're discussing sensitive topics. What I meant to say is, you know, it's only common sense that, you know, I don't think that people who aren't observant wouldn't necessarily appreciate the way we consider halach to categorize them. I think that's fair enough. Ironically or paradoxically, in this case, we'll be actually more lenient, at least for the shach, the more quote unquote harshly we judge them. The paradox is that one way you could be machmir against everything, at least according to the shach, is to say, but if you assume, again, take a person who grew up never knowing anything, they're third generation reform or secular, as the case may be, so then we generally assume that that person is what we call a tinuk shenishba. They don't know any better. We can't really blame them, which is all true. Well, in that case, you might not be able to call them a Yisrael Mumer, and then you might lose the shach. You might gain, you might still have the other legs to stand on, but you might lose the shach. Let's take one more question. Yeah. Yes, again, the bigger issues we're going to get to, I promise. The shir didn't end yet. Okay, let's take one step at a time. This is you're being Lashi Tusker. Remind me your name again?
Daniel.
Dan or Daniel?
Yeah,
Daniel.
Yeah.
So Daniel is Lashi Tusker because your first question was also looking at broader concerns. I promise we're getting there, okay? So we've said two main halachic stops so far. One is the Lifnei Iver, the second one is the Misayeya. Number three. Big argument can be made in a very in contradistinction. Until now, we were saying, listen, maybe it's not an usur at all. You know, it's not listening to Iver, it's not Messiah, maybe it's not usur at all. One argument that we could make that would change the equation is to say, listen, maybe it, and this is really what a few others I think I have been getting at, which is that maybe in a vacuum, narrowly speaking, it would be prohibited. But let's look at the bigger picture. What bigger picture are we talking about? Who said we can look at a bigger picture? So for example, not about imitations, but a very similar case. Very well-known psak a number of years ago by Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Similar case. Shulchan Aruch rules in Aruch Chaim and Siman Kuf, Samach Tes, black and white, on the Shulchan Aruch Sif Aleph. You cannot give food to someone who you know will not make a bracha. It's a form of Lifnei Iver also. Are you giving them food? You know they're not going to make a bracha. How could you do that? Kuf Samach Tes Sif Aleph Orachayim. Comes along Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach in a tshuva published in his volume of tshuvas Minchas Shlomo with the following scenario, the following chiddush. Let's say you have a worker or somebody at your house and you would otherwise want to be polite and offer them a cup of water or something like that on a hot day. He's working hard. And you say, whoa, worker's Jewish, I can't offer him because he's not wearing a yarmulke. What's, in many cases, a very reasonable fear? That this person is going to, what, Zach? Right. This person is probably not going to walk away from the experience saying, wow, those Orthodox shoes are great. I will get me some Orthodox. That, probably not. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, again, yeah, this is not a blanket heter. You have to know the situation. Could be that this person has been by your house 10 times, you've never offered him a drink of water, and he loves you. But at least hypothetically, it makes a lot of sense. In certainly many cases, it could be that by you not offering them something, you will, to use Rosh Shlomo Zalman's description, you will increase their hatred of Torah. Says Rosh Shlomo Zalman, what's the bigger vulnerability for this person's neshama? The particular specific isur of not making the bracha? Or generally, attitudinally, being turned off to Torah or Orthodox Jews? Obviously, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in the big picture, for this person's spiritual well-being, it's a net gain if he says, wow, those Orthodox Jews are so nice and polite and friendly, but he did get a demerit, he did sin by not making the bracha. In the big picture of this person's life, in the trajectory, if you are talking about odds of his, you know, spiritual health, there's no question that the one time he, you know, had that positive experience certainly may help him in a way that avoiding the non-bracha is clearly not going to. And therefore, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in this case, you're not supposed to put a michshol in front of someone. Here he says the michshol would be not offering them the food, because that will be a michshol and trip them up in thinking negatively and resentfully, understandably, towards halacha, towards Torah. Whereas if you give them the drink or the food, even though they're not going to make the bracha, but that's not a michshol because it's been overwhelmed if we take a bigger picture view. Now this is a big chiddush. Not everyone thinks that we can look at the big picture, but no less than Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach himself does.
What?
In a similar way, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who's, you know, even bigger and even earlier than Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, discusses the following interesting case. We know we're not allowed to round out, you know, the sides of our hair, right? We're not allowed to completely remove our peyos. That's called, so there's something called makif. You can't round off your hair, makif. But there's also an isur called nikaf. Now, if a person would take a, you know, shave off their peyos, so they actually had two prohibitions: that they did it, and that it was done, makif and nikaf. So there's a discussion about whether a woman who is not included, it's one of the examples from the Mishnayos and Masechet Kedushin, that's one of the only examples of a lotase that doesn't apply to women.
Last week, your colleague was.
Oh, okay. Okay. So tell me if I step on anyone's. Did they discuss Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the Shir Klali?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember.
Okay. That's not a test. So. There's a discussion, the Shulchan Aruch there in Yoredeya Simen Kuf Pei Aleph says it's usur for a woman to shave off a man's peis. It's usur. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger on the bottom of the page, why? She's not muzheret in the law of this prohibition. So he says it must be that it's a form of a Aleph Na'iver or a Misayeya, etc. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that's at first blush. But at second blush, he says, let me think about this. Maybe it would be better. Because if the woman, let's say, take a wife, if she does this for her husband, she's actually saving him a sin. If he does it himself, he violates two averos, makif and nikaf. But if he just sits there and lets his wife give him the haircut, he violated how many? Only one. And if the idea of misayeya and the like is to help a person and be mafrish them, you know, separate them or protect them from sin, well, in this case, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, her acting in a way that is helping him transgress, but if you look at the bigger picture, not even the bigger picture of his life, just the bigger picture of the moment, you went from two to one era. It's a huge chiddush, but he suggests that that might also be allowed. So if you put these ideas together, so some poskim have argued that perhaps this would be a great basis of heter for the Shabbos invitation. After all, it may very well be true that the person is going to drive because of you. And maybe that really should be prohibited because of Lifnei Iver. But who said we have to look at only the narrow local picture? Maybe we could take a step back, zoom out, and look at the big picture. And presumably, in the big picture, this is clearly better for the person that they have this positive Shabbos experience even though it's true your invitation required them to drive. So maybe that should overwhelm, forget all the technical things we were seeing until now. Maybe there's more of a big, again, it's halachic, but it's almost, you know, halachic slash philosophical. Let's look at the bigger picture of this person's life. Isn't this experience going to help them? And therefore, if it is going to help them, it's a net spiritual win for them. Shouldn't that in any way blow out of the water, overwhelm, discount any technical lifnei iver discussions? So a number of poskim, in fact, do advance this. Somebody who probably no one in this room was ever a neighbor of, but maybe your parents or your grandparents were, and that is Rav Moshe Sternbach. He used to live in Johannesburg before moving to Har Nof, and I think it's fair to say that Rav Moshe Sternbach is not known, I would say, as a great mekiel. He's not a big lenient posek per se, but he's very lenient on this shaila, very lenient on this shaila of Shabbos invitations. And I'm not positive, but I suspect that the time that the shaila that he got might have come when he was in South Africa, where, as we know, there is obviously a big Kiruv movement, and he was asked this question about the Shabbos invitations. And Rav Moshe Sternbach actually was lenient, not based on any of the earlier issues we discussed, but based on this issue, that in the big picture, this is actually helping the person. Now, he actually says something a little bit interesting. We'll see, some poskim might even go a smidge further than him, but just to be fair and present this accurately, when you read his tshuva, his tshuvas are called Tshuvos van Hagos, multi-volume work. So there, Rav Sternbach in Chelek Aleph, Simen, Shin, Nun, Ches, he focuses on the intention of the one giving the invitation. If your intent is to invite them over, to show them the beauty of Shabbos and, you know, be makar of them, even if it's a soft sell, I don't mean you're going to, like, keep Shabbos, you know, I don't know if that'll work, but it's, no, you want to give them a positive spiritual experience and connect them to other Orthodox Jews, and, you know, but if that's really, in your mind, part of the goal, Senator Sherbach, he thinks based on what we just said. I'm only mentioning it because if you wanted to read him very, very carefully, you could be medayek that perhaps, maybe that would be a distinction between someone who's really doing quote-unquote kiruv and just, you know, inviting over your uncle or your sibling or whoever it may be on Machal Shabbos. There, you know, if your motivation is just, we're family, I want to be together with the Aunt Bertha, or, you know, Uncle Tony always comes for Seder or something. So then, if it's more of a family issue, it's not clear that Sternbach would be makel. Maybe. You could still argue that objectively, the positive experiences in a Torah environment of Shabbos or Yontif are going to be makar of the person. So it's a question how literally to take his formulation, because he does tilt towards the question of the intention of the person extending the invitation. But you don't have to go as far as him. And Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, who was a great posek in his own right, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's son-in-law, but a great posek in his own right, he and others are willing to be makel just based on this larger argument. And that is that, what, you know, leave aside the intention, but just objectively, if you expose someone to a beautiful Shabbos, a beautiful Yontif, so that is going to be a net win for the person's association with Torah, and even if it's only slightly, it will increase their odds of perhaps getting more observant than if they just stay home or do whatever they would have otherwise done on a Shabbos on a Saturday. But hey, at least I didn't call them to drive. Now again, Rav Yaakov Ariel, who we've quoted before earlier in this year from Ramat Gan, his Tshuvos Olo Shel Torah, he's not against this, but he's not sure you could push it so far. Like, for example, Rabbi Kiva Eger, he said, who said you could apply the Rabbi Kiva Eger case? In the Rabbi Kiva Eger case with the shaving, says there, if you have the wife do the shaving, what are the odds that you've saved the husband from an extra sin? Small, maybe, or guaranteed? Guaranteed! That's a vadai! If you invite someone for a Shabbos, what are the odds that you will, you know, enhance or maybe help them become observant? Small, possible, likely, or guaranteed? I don't know where it is, but it's not guaranteed. I mean, you know, you could have confidence in your children, but a little humility, please. You know, I don't care how good a voice you have, how rocking your zmiros are, but you can't say that it's a guarantee. Well, they just got to have my Shabbos, and that's going to turn them right around, right? It's a suffix. So he's not sure that would be the best. But if you go with Rav Shlomo Zalman with the bracha, where he just says, listen, you can't do things that are going to make people turned off to Torah. So again, they're also, but that's, he's in your house. So again, maybe in certain cases, if you don't invite over, you know, Uncle Charlie, Because even though you always have it together, but now all of a sudden you learned in yeshiva there's an issue, so maybe then you'll turn them off. So then maybe enecharam you'll be mutter. But just this proactive kirov attitude, he's not against Yaakov Ariel, but he's not sure. He doesn't buy it. But other posts can say, including Rav Shterbach, seem to be very, very predisposed to that idea. Yes. Boston from Boston.
Yeah. Two things on the same exact point. Rav Yaakov Ariel, who we just said, it's not a vadai that, like, will bring him, will make him religious.
Right.
According to Rav Akiva Eger, that wasn't the issue. It was more like, according to the...
Shlomo Zalman Auerbach.
No, it's just... Yeah, exactly.
Milcha Shlomo, yeah.
It wasn't the bringing him close. It was like the loving.
Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was speaking almost in avoiding a negative. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's case of not giving a person something to drink, which is the halacha of Shulchan Aruch. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says again, it depends on the scenario. But if by you not giving a person a drink, you're going to turn them off, you're going to make them despise Torah. So that's a bigger michshol. It's a bigger stumbling block than just not having made a bracha.
Yeah, so to that. What's like the specific issue to turning people who are
fascinating, right?
On,
right,
on.
Is that interesting? Very interesting. I'm happy to show you the tshuva inside. It's not clear. That's why it's a chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Maybe it's appropriate that he's looking over your shoulder right now. No, right? Yeah, that's Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Lichtenstein. That's a great picture. So. That's a big chiddush, but he holds again. This is an important thing, you know. When you make a chil Hashem, not you, I hope not. But if one would make a chil Hashem, so if in any way, you know, the people who viewed your bad behavior, as the case may be, you know, were that much more removed or less open to Torah or Orthodoxy or et cetera, or Judaism. So then, that itself is not only a chil Hashem, according to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, it's kind of a lifnei iver. In other words, when you say this, well, you know, how come the secular Jews hate the religious Jews? So first of all, who said they really hate us? I think that's often not the case. But let's say they do. So how come no one ever asks the second question? Why? Is it at all possible that even a little bit our behavior had anything to do with that? No one ever asks that question. Now, I'm not saying it always is the case. I'm not trying to make things too pat or too black and white. But we have to ask ourselves, there's an achrayah. What you see, Austin, from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in a broad sense, there's an achrayah, there's a responsibility that we have as from people, as a religious community, to not just in some generic vanilla sense, always, you know, make a good impression. But no, more specifically, we're responsible if our behavior turns a person off, makes that person that much less likely to view Torah in a positive way. So we are responsible in many ways for anything that might, you know, happen. Anyways, we have 10 minutes left. I want to do two more points. One is one other halachic point, and then we'll sum up with, so where does this all leave us? So far we saw the issue of lifnei iver on a deraisa level. We saw the issue of misayeya on a rabbinic level, and then three possible ways out of that. And now we saw the question of, well, maybe we could look at the big picture, or maybe not. Do we have a right to just zoom out and say, well, even if technically there is a problem, but maybe the big picture, the net gain, should outweigh that. The last issue I want to mention before we sum it all up is a chiddush of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You thought Rav Moshe couldn't be more machmir than he already is. You're wrong. We started off by saying that Rav Moshe held that you cannot invite people over because it's a violation of Mida Oraisa, a Torah violation of Lifnei Iver. So where do you go up from that? Rav Moshe found a way. Rav Moshe said there's something even worse, he thinks, and that is an aveira called to be a mesis umediach. Now, a mesis umediach is something that's even more intense. He says that's not just someone who's playing a role, even a crucial role, in another person's sin. That's a person who is almost soliciting or egging on the person to sin. Right? What's lifnei iver, said Rav Moshe Feinstein? The guy's, there's two sides of the river, he asked me for the bottle of wine, I get in my rowboat. But what would be worse than that, said Rav Moshe? What's worse than that? He asked me for the wine and I get in my rowboat and I row.
Going on the rowboat?
No, going on the rowboat. That's what's worse than going on the rowboat in response to his request?
You
say, hey buddy! A good day for a bottle of dry red wine, huh? Nothing would cap off today like a little alcohol. Oh, look, I have it right here. And I'm in the mood for exercise. Would you like me to come over? That's not just lifnei iver. That no. What term do we use for something worse than lifnei iver? Says Rav Moshe, that's called mesis umediach. You are going after the person. You are caught enticing, I guess is the English word. You're enticing the person to sin. So here, says Rav Moshe, you're enticing the person. You invited them over. It's not like he said, hey, could I come for dinner? And then you said, I know you're going to try, but you invited him. Now, Rav Moshe has a problem, which he asks on himself, which is that the only basis that we have for such a prohibition called Meisis Umediach in the Torah is referring to someone who entices for which specific Avera? Avodah Zarah. So who said it applies to other things like Shabbos? So Rav Moshe quotes in a brilliant way, a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin speaks about the the original, if you will, biblical snake, Nachash HaKadmoni in the Gemara's term, where the Nachash enticed Chava to sin. And the Gemara seems to say that the Nachash, at least for an academic purposes, I don't know if the Nachash is Mechuyev in Mitzvos, although we do see the Nachash as punished, so apparently Hashem did hold him responsible. So the Gemara says, what was the sin of the Nachash? That he was a Mesis. A Mesis Umediach. So it says, Rav Moshe, you see from that Gemara that Mesis does not limit it to Avodah Zarah. Mesis even applied on eating the fruit from the Eitz Hadas. So if Mesis could apply on that, Mesis could certainly apply on inviting someone over for Chilul Shabbos. Whoa. Now we've like really, you know, raised the stakes. So Rav Yaakov Ariel and some other posts, but Rav Yaakov Ariel here he goes to bat for the Mechilim. He says this is just too much. He even suggests at one point that maybe Rav Moshe didn't really mean it, because he thinks it's such a chiddush to go this far. Says we have a concept of not helping people sin. That's called lifnei iver. You know, you don't have to go make it worse than that. Plus, he says, if you look at a number of the Rishonim on that Gemara, again, I don't want to get into a whole Parshanut class, or Tarshma Pet, Tarshma Sav type Parshanut class, but he says, if you look at a number of Rishonim there in Sanhedrin, they understand that the sin of the snake, or the sin of Chav, the whole Eitz Hadas thing, was a form of Avodah Zarah. Was a form of Avodah Zarah. Now, how? What does that mean? Beyond the scope of the remaining time that we have. But it's in Rishonim, that the sin with Eitz Hadas was a form of Avodah Zarah. What does that tell you about what Avodah Zarah really means? Clearly it doesn't just mean bowing down to a silly idol. That's important, but not for now. But the point is, says Rav Yaakov Ariel, you cannot use that Gemara, some Agadic Gemara with the story of the snake and Chava, as a basis of ratcheting up the halachic stakes here and saying this is worse than lifnei iver, it's even Meisis Umediach. So Rav Moshe does say it, but that seems to be one that he didn't really get too many other supporters for. Okay, so we have various issues of lifnei iver, of misayeya, we have the issue now of mesis, and then we have the whole question of can you look at the big picture versus the little picture. So where does that leave us in the last 2 minutes of our shiur? With a machlokes. Rav Moshe Feinstein, clearly as we've seen, holds it's totally usser. Rav Al-Yashiv is quoted by his son-in-law is also prohibiting this. He has a very sharp line. He says nothing good will ever sprout forth, will ever grow from a sin. Right? The ends don't justify the means. You can't think you're going to produce kiruv through Chilul Shabbos. Apparently Rav Yashiv was also against. The Shevet HaLevi, Rav Wozner, he adds a whole new chiddush. He is also against, and he thinks not only is it all everything we've said until now, he thinks it's a Chilul Hashem. The idea that from people are enabling and participating and inviting and soliciting Chilul Shabbos says that's itself a Chilul Hashem, if nothing else. So he piles that on a new issue which we hadn't even considered until now. So you have some very big poskim who feel that this really happened. In most parts of the community, I think some of the parts of the community in which we travel, the common minhag is to be mekel. Why? Where did it come from? So the answer is because there's a number of other big poskim who argue on what we've just said and who in fact are lenient. I mentioned previously Rav Asher Weiss. I mentioned previously Rav Sternbach, who is Mekil, both of whom obviously significant poskim. Rav Yaakov Ariel and that Shuv of Ola Shel Torah. Again, he's not as I thrilled with it. I wouldn't say he is as embracing of it as Rav Sternbach was, but at the end of the day, if this is what's necessary, either perhaps for the family, and certainly Laman Kiruv, there's a basis you see in Rav Yaakov Ariel also to be lenient, or Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in addition to the tshuva he gave about feeding people, you know, who are guests in your house, but the rabbis of Or Sameach, the Baal Tshuva Kiruv Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, the rabbis of Or Sameach asked Rav Shlomo Zalman for his opinion, and he was also lenient in writing to them in a letter which has recently been published in his later volume of Tshuvas. And that does seem to be that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, the Rosh Hashiva from Tarvadas in New York, was also Makil, and the Sefer they published of his Psakim called Emes Liakov, also Makil. But one last caveat, the but. Rav Sternbach seems to be, again, if your intention is Kiruv, if you think it's going to be Kiruv, he seems to be totally Makil, amazing Chiddush. Could be that others might agree with that. But there is a big group in the middle. Among those such as Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and others that I just quoted, they add the following condition, which is important to keep in mind. They say it's totally mutter if you give the person an opportunity to stay over Shabbos. In other words, let's say you're inviting them for Friday night dinner. So you have to say, not only we really want you for the whole Shabbos, but I'm happy to make up the bed. Guest room is yours. You know there's a 1 in a million chance or less that they're going to say yes. Doesn't matter. You have to do your part. It has to be sincere. I mean, you can't, in your heart of hearts, if you're hoping they say no, or there is no guest room, you know, we rented it out. Okay, that's probably a problem. But if it's really genuinely sincere, even though you know it's unlikely, that is sufficient. And a number of poskim add that as a stipulation. And again, I think it's an important one because at the end of the day, we shouldn't be comfortable or, you know, so, you know, the idea of asking someone to be Mechal Shabbos, even if you have the best of intentions for family or kiruv reasons, it really should give us some spiritual heartburn. And this may be one kind of little symbolic, but still apparently I think important way to do this. It's as much as I hope you have the impulse, and I hope especially eventually when you leave yeshiva, you really have the impulse to share the beauty of Torah and the beauty of things you've learning in yeshiva, and whether it's in your communities, on your campuses, etc., you shouldn't think that there's this blanket thing called heter kiruv. You know, as long as I'm, you know, so to speak, trying to, you know, help people or share the beauty of the Torah, it's all mutter. It's not true. We have to keep halachos. It could be that this really is mutter. With all the respect to Moshe Feinstein and others, there are many poskim who are mekil. And again, that is the common minhag. I think it is to be mekil. But this type of added point of help, you know, offering that invitation, you know, don't just come for lunch, come for the whole Shabbos. No problem, we'd love to have you. They don't take you up on it, so then they can come anyway. But that offer should be genuine and sincere. I know that when I was a little bit older than you guys are now, and I was doing NCSY and things like that in America, I asked my Rebbe, he didn't give me the whole shiur, but when I asked him in his office, he said he thinks it's permissible as long as you give people an opportunity to sleep over. So I see that Rabbi Liebtag is here. I'm going to step out, but anyone